Okay, guys, welcome to this week's episode of Corecast. Thank you for joining us. We have a great episode lined up for you. We've got some great chat about the Hawk. And we've also got Taz from The Starters joining us later on in the show, which is going to be very, very fun. Let's start it off. We got a great win against Sacramento where we beat them at home 130. Yes, you did hear that correctly. 130-105. Fantastic game. Tony, let's start us off. We scored so many points. That's just incredible. 130 points. What do we say about that?
Well, I think that 130 points is definitely our season high. And I think that it just proves that this offense was running at peak efficiency, hitting 23 pointers and 42 assists in the game. I'm just blown away by the offensive explosion. I think that the Kings obviously are not a great defensive team, right? Let's be clear about that. This is like whooping up on the straggler, let's say, to the league defensively. They're definitely one of the worst defensive teams in the league. And once you get the ball whipping around like we had it going, guys like Jeff Teague and Dennis Schroeder just throwing passes from everywhere. You know, obviously that's going to kickstart an offense that works like the Hawks. And I'm just so happy that we were able to get a win like this under our belts. Despite the fact that we ended up going into Denver and losing, that's obviously not a huge problem. It's always good to see, you know, a team work at that type of peak offensive efficiency, especially with regard to hitting threes and throwing assists like Teague and Schroeder were.
Yeah, as you said, just were on fire offensively. Josh, one thing I do want to talk about, though, that I've mentioned quite a lot and something that is a bit worrying as we get down the stretch towards the playoffs, 57% from the free throw line. Our free throw shooting has not been great recently. We picked up a little bit, and I think it's something that we really need to crack down on coming up to the playoffs. Is it a worry for the Hawks, or is it something we can kind of mull over?
Missing your free throws is always a concern, but with how the offense looked when we were playing the Kings and how the defense looked, it's not the number one thing on my concern. But as we know, every point counts, and free throws are something that I guess are going to be a concern. And I'm looking at you, Kent Bazemore, and of course, sometimes.
All right, hater. Kent Bazemore, a hater.
God. I'm sorry.
What does he need to do?
He proved me wrong. I'm sorry. He made me look dumb earlier in the season. I doubted him. I was 100% wrong. The man can play defense.
You will learn to doubt the Bazed God. You have learned your lesson.
He could play defense. He was our emergency backup point guard that one game. All of a sudden he can score off the dribble. He's hitting three-pointers. That's why I guess I'm kind of mad that he's missing free throws, because he's hitting these clutch three-pointers like he did against the Suns. And it's just, ugh. But back to the free throw. Yes, free throws are a concern, but as of right now, I'm not really 100% concerned about it. We'll have to wait for the rest of the season to end before I'll be like, okay, we need to work on this, guys.
For me, the game was kind of the first quarter that they didn't really seem to mark Kyle Korver as well as I thought they'd try to. And I thought Al Horford did a really good job with his elbow shot. And I'd really like to see it. One thing that he started doing earlier on in the season that we haven't seen as much recently is he'd start to kind of make his elbow shot, and the players that were marking him would begin to come out because obviously they're going to contest it. And then as soon as he sees them come out, he'd pump fake and he'd go around them, and obviously their weight transfer wouldn't be able to like shift quick enough, and they'd already be on the back foot, and by then he'd be past them thanks to the fact that he's got kind of like undersized and he's quicker than the other centers. And I would have liked to see him do that a couple more times, probably throughout the last couple of games. Just use that move. It's very effective. And he did, I mean, against Cleveland, he used that move, and he got that monster jam that we spoke about last week. But yeah, James, how was the game for you? We've spoke about how offensively it was just incredible. But do you think 105 points is something that we need to worry about defensively against Sacramento?
I mean, not really. If you're scoring over 130 points, I think it's okay to give up 105 points in that instance. I mean, your only big concern is if it's a close game like that and you're not scoring as much. I'm going to go a little John Madden here, but the team with the most points is going to win the game. So it doesn't matter if they have 105 at that point. We're still up over 130 points in that game. So the 105 points right there does not concern me one bit.
Moving on to the Denver game, which is a game that we don't really want to brush on too much. But obviously, Well, unfortunately, we fell to Denver 115-102 away. Tony, where do we start with that? I mean, it was just kind of uncomfortable to watch. And for me, things didn't seem to be clicking. Is there anything that you kind of think that could be the cause of that loss? Is there anything that you spotted that you think might be the reason why we didn't quite perform as well?
Honestly, I hate to say it because this is something that I fundamentally disagree with as a concept, but this game felt to me like the Philadelphia game where we just say, you know what, this is a schedule loss. We're playing away in Denver, who's not even a playoff team. They're not going to test us in any severe way. Al Horford played 23 minutes and had 6 points. And 3 rebounds. Like he just didn't even make an impact in the game. Dennis Schroeder had 13. John Jenkins had 10. I think that at that point you're saying, okay, when John Jenkins and Mike Muscala are getting 10 minutes off the bench, Bud said to himself, you know what? We're working in Denver. It's a rough place to play because of the altitude difference. And I mentioned this last week. Don't underestimate that. It really does affect these players, especially when you're talking about players that play in Atlanta, which doesn't really have the same altitude at all. It can take a toll on their bodies. And they felt a bit sluggish out there. And it really showed towards the end of the game where, well, actually what ended up happening at the end of the game was we sort of hit our stride. We got our second wind. But in the third quarter, the Nuggets scored 38 points. And then we scored 34 points in the fourth. And we managed to get it within, you know, say, you know, 13 points there at the end. But it was never really a close game. So, you know, we played like not good players at all. Let's keep it PG here. But, you know, it's not a huge deal to me. It doesn't really bother me that much. I liked the resolve that our second unit showed there at the end to try and battle back and get it close. But, you know, it's a schedule loss. And we showed that when it matters, we went out and beat a playoff team or a playoff maybe pushing team there in the Suns on Friday. So it doesn't really bother me that much.
Josh, tell us about the theory that you came up with, the Denver loss on purpose. That's very interesting. We spoke about that before the podcast. Just give us a little slight overview.
The conspiracy.
It's the conspiracy.
Okay, this is a conspiracy. So as I put on my tinfoil hat right now before I give it. No, I was looking at the standings before, I guess, the game. And on our friendly tankathon.com. No, but I was looking at the standings and I noticed Denver in the West was only, I believe, 2.5 games behind the Brooklyn Nets. And as all Hawks fans know who are listening to this, we get the pick swap. Thank you, Billy King, for throwing that in. But we get the pick swap. And I just noticed, again, they were 2 games behind. With us losing to the Nuggets, a lottery team, that put us 1.5 games behind. And then I was thinking, well, maybe that's it. Maybe we lost so we could go up in the standing. I mean, it helped me to get past the pain of all of our starters playing and getting beat by 20 points. But, yeah, it really helped. But we can only thank the Warriors for resting all of their starters on, I believe it was Friday they played the Nuggets.
That's right.
That's right. They rested all of them. And now the Nuggets are only 0.5 games behind the Nets, which puts us, where are we at? Currently, the Nets have the 9th, I guess, are 9th in picking, and Denver is 8. So if the Nets can lose another game and Denver can win their next game, that's hey, right. Hawks fans, we're down to 8 now, and we trailed Detroit.
Wow.
So, tank for Atlanta.
Tank for Atlanta, Denver. We're Denver fans. The more Denver wins, the better our chances are that we'll get a better pick. That's great news.
Go Nuggets.
Go Nuggets. So I guess now we should look to talk about the Suns game. They're a good team. They're certainly, you know, Markieff Morris is a hell of a player. Well, both the Morris twins actually combined for 40 points against us. So, James, what do you think about the Suns game and our ability to sort of come from behind and take the lead away from them and ultimately win the game?
I mean, I like it when we go out, like we come from behind and win games like that. I mean, that shows the true test of a playoff team, even though we're not in the playoffs right now. I mean, it kind of gives you a kind of look ahead of what to expect for the future. I mean, in the fourth quarter, we went on a 31-14 run. Late in the fourth quarter, scored 5 3-pointers, and we actually saw Phoenix take 5 and miss all 5 of them in the forth. So I think the barrage of three-pointers at the end helped us a lot. Taking those clutch shots from beyond the arc and being able to make them when you need to, it shows what I can expect from this Hawks team coming up into the playoffs. And what I want to see as a Hawks fan, it gives me a little bit of closure in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're completely right about the fact that this is definitely a looking forward match for the playoffs for us. It's sort of a nice little look into how we might play in the playoffs. Ben, Kyle Korver, 14 points, 3-for-4 from three-point land, had a true shooting percentage of 83%.
Kyle's back.
What do we think? How do we feel? We were talking about it. We were saying it's the elephant in the room, but here he is. Comes out, he has a pretty decent game against the Suns. How do you feel about it?
Kyle Korver is just—he's just a guy, isn't he? He's just the Hawks in a nutshell. No, it's great to see him back to shooting well. And before the All-Star game, actually, well, the All-Star break, we did speak about how could this affect him, the fact that he was taking part in a three-point contest, you know. And in baseball, sometimes when they do the home run derby thing, they say that the swing, it could affect them and stuff. And we were like, oh, no, it won't affect him. And then he came back and he was shooting not the same. And as I was saying last week, I think if you look at some of the shots, it was kind of some of the shots he was taking seemed a bit frustrated, a bit forced. But now I think ever since he got that rest, and we were talking about how it was good to clear his mind, because, you know, as you mentioned, Tony, last week, shooting at this level is psychological, you know. You missed a shot and it's like you got to think, oh, don't worry, I'll make the next one. Not, you know, you can't be downing yourself. Otherwise, it's like a snowball effect. As soon as one goes and another one goes, then it all kind of goes downhill. But yeah, it's great to see him back on form. And it just lights up the arena. It's just fantastic. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, I think I speak for everybody when I say that watching Kyle Korver play well is, I think, probably the greatest joy that we can feel as a Hawks fan. Because he just exemplifies everything that we love about our team. And following that, Josh, we saw a game from Paul Millsap here. 23 points, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks and 3 steals, 6 takeaways on the day. He shot 3 of 6 from 3 and 10 of 11 from the field. What are we seeing right now from Paul Millsap? People are saying you don't have a guy on this Hawks team that you can expect to go off for 20 points, or someone who, you know, it's just you can throw the ball to and he can get you buckets. But I think we're actually sort of starting to see that a little bit with Paul Millsap here. He does it quietly. It might not be 23 points like LeBron James does it, but he certainly finds his way to get his. What can you say about Paul Millsap, and what does this mean for us looking at the playoffs?
Paul Millsap had a fantastic game against the Suns. He was getting some hits. He was getting some fouls, but, you know, he kept going. He kept going to the hoop. He stayed aggressive. One of the things I really like about him, he had a lot of his three-pointers, well, at least I noticed, when the Hawks started to make that comeback in the fourth quarter with 9 minutes remaining. He did hit some of those three-pointers then, which I'm sure left many Suns fans questioning, when did he learn how to shoot? But it was great. As far as the playoffs, one of the mismatches that I can see is Paul Millsap's going to wear some people down. The combination of him and Horford, people talk about us having a size disadvantage. Well, those two, with their speed and their skill, their craft, their shooting, they're going to wear some people down. Think about this. If we do make it to the ECF, we play the Cavs or whomever, Paul Millsap's going to be matched up against Kevin Love. Kevin Love, although he did an okay job on Millsap last game, he has, you know, the reputation to be a soft defender. So
Can he do it for 7? Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, can he defend him? And this is an exciting team. Paul's done a great job.
And let's not forget that he's putting that up against Markieff and Marcus Morris, who sort of, you know, they both defend that power forward position.
Yeah.
And that makes them one of the harder matchups. The Suns are one of the harder power forward matchups in the league. They've got sort of that length in the middle there. And so, and him putting up 23 against them, that's pretty
decent. Impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Also from the game, is there a guy on the team who has more swagger than Dennis Schroeder?
Absolutely not.
So if I show up to a game with a blonde patch in my hair, you guys won't judge me.
Absolutely not. In fact, okay. I think that if you don't – all right, I will – we need to make a bet or something, all right? where if you lose, you have to get the Dennis streak in your hair. And if I lose, I don't know, I'll like grow out Perro's beard or something.
Oh, man. No, Dennis, man, he goes onto the court with no fear. He thinks he's the best guy in the court. He was getting into it with LeBron when we played the Cavs.
Yeah.
And he saw the stare down dunk against the Suns. I'm like, this guy.
It's one of those things where, you know, you don't know if you like it or not, but you certainly can kind of respect it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know if I necessarily like it, you know?
No,
like,
I get it.
That's because I'm a purist. I don't really like that type of stuff. I won't say, though, that it didn't get the team amped. You know, there's something to be said. To me, there's no difference between that and Budenholzer going off. He did it the other day when Paul Millsap wasn't getting calls. He got called for a tech, and that amps the team up. That gets everybody energized. And in the other team's gym, when you're on the road, sometimes you need that. And you can bet that Kemp Bazemore got amped as hell after Dennis Schroeder stood over him like that.
Bazemore dancing on the bench.
Oh, please.
We have come a long way since Larry Drew just staring menacingly on
the
side.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay. Tony, last week we were talking about how Hawks couldn't keep a lead in some games and it was being a struggle. How great was it for you to be able to see us come from behind? We haven't done that much this season. Was that, I'm guessing, you know, that was enjoyable for you to watch because of what we were talking about last week?
I mean, for me, that was the best part. I put this Suns victory right in the same realm as the Rockets' victory, you know, last week. For me, come-from-behind wins are, as James alluded to earlier, they are the fabric of playoff winning. You can't win in the playoffs if you can't face adversity and come from behind and try and win a game like that. And here's how we did it. And I might get a little bit technical here, but just bear with me. You'll see that in the fourth quarter, Atlanta outscored Phoenix 31-14. All right, and most of those shots were from Kyle Korver and Paul Millsap behind the line. That was when our three-point shooting, we went 5 from 5 from three in the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's actually true, but I think that's right. But the reality is that in the fourth quarter, when you're able to put up 31 points, you're definitely going to win that game. And for me, that is the type of offense that we need to see at the end of games to close them out in the playoffs. Because when you're up against the Cavaliers or the Bulls, teams like that, you're going to have games where they're going to be ahead, especially away and on the road like we were in Phoenix. And that's when you need to see players like Kent Bazemore step up shooting. He shot 5 of 6 from the field and 100% from three. He only hit 1 3, but still, he's taking good shots, smart shots, putting up 11 points. I don't know. I can't say enough for this game. I'm really excited. Hopefully we can get the win against the Lakers tonight. But I can't say enough for this team and this win after this one, especially coming off of a rough loss in Denver on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's great to see. And it's just great seeing the players just all rally together and just want it so much, especially after all the chemistry gets ruined throughout the week.
You guys,
and they go at each other playing Uno in, on their journeys.
Have you guys been following along with Mike Muscala's West Coast road trip Instagram thing at all? No? Is that just me?
I haven't.
If you guys don't follow everybody that's listening to this podcast, listen, all right? First off, you need to follow us on Twitter. That's an obvious thing. If you haven't done that already, shame on you. But you should also go and follow everybody in the Hawks org. The Instagram accounts of Mike Scott and Mike Muscala are some of the funniest things I've ever seen. Mike Scott once a day will post a picture of his socks that he's wearing. Because why not? It's Mike Scott. It's Young 3moji, and that's who he is. So, you know, that's just a little side note. Everybody, you guys need to get involved. Follow these guys. They're hilarious. It's worth your time.
Talking of Mike Scott, unfortunately, he got himself injured. He fractured his toe, and then he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Which is quite a long time to be kind of playoffs by then. James, how do you think this is going to affect the team? Do you think that, it's going to be difficult because by the time he comes back, it's going to be playoff time, and getting him back into the rotation at that sort of time is going to be critical, but also tough. But do you think we'll be okay?
I mean, there's going to be some pros and cons with it. I think the good thing to look forward to is we'll have Cephalosha back before then. But, I mean, we're going to be missing some key 3 points and maybe some key dunks that you like seeing from Mike Scott every now and then. I mean, he brings a great presence to the floor. I wouldn't say it's too detrimental. I mean, you're going to see a little bit taken off from the team. But I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. like I said, Cephalosha is going to be back soon. That's going to be great, getting him back in the rotation before the playoffs begin. And then Mike Scott being out for the little amount that he's going to be out and the time he's going to be out. I think that we'll see a little – we'll see him kind of struggle getting back in that rotation, but I think we get to the second round, third round, the playoffs, I think you'll see Mike Scott coming in a little bit more, and I think he'll be able to get that same contribution in that he was able to before his injury.
Let's talk about how we just signed Austin Day to a 10-day contract. For me, that's a great little find, someone with a bit of playoff experience, I suppose. I don't know how long we're going to keep him for, ideally. Tony, what's your views on this pickup that we got this week?
I feel positive about it. I really do. Only because, Austin Day, listen, here are some facts. First off, let's get the facts out of there. Austin Day only played 26 games last season with the Spurs, 14 games the season before, and 8 games the season before that in Toronto. So, last season he played 8 games with Toronto, 14 games with the Spurs. And he's the type of player who provides something from three. He is a three-point shooter. He's played in the Spurs system, which is a positive. I know that Budenholzer likes guys like that. And he's been doing pretty well in the D-League. Can't say that I, don't really like his stats. That being said, I don't really know if he can keep a spot. I think that he's really just coming on as someone who we can have on our roster, who we can draw on if we need him to maybe come in and hit a shot and play some defense. But the reality is that we're still just using this as a tide over to get us back to Thabo Sefolosha being healthy and Mike Scott after that, which is really the main priority, I think, right now. Getting Thabo Sefolosha back, game ready, playoff ready, coming off of a rough injury. I think that people don't really understand how difficult a strained calf is. It's really tough to come back from. He's an athletic player. He wants to feel 100%. I understand that. But when he comes back, we're going to see him in Day, I think, really, maybe they'll play well together. I think they will. And then when Mike Scott comes back, Day, if he's still on the roster, he's someone that you'd like to have in the playoffs. He's someone who is consistent and can hit a three. You always want that on the bench if you have it, especially with Pero coming into a bit of a slump right now. We need that three-point shooting coming from somewhere.
I totally agree. Before we go to our break and we get Taz on the show, and Josh, we're going to start with you. Lakers, Oklahoma, Golden State, Spurs. What are we doing this week? 4-0?
Oh, my goodness. That's murderous throw right there. Okay. I think we'll beat the Lakers. We better, because I was there at the game when we lost to the Lakers. So I hope they're just as angry as I was sitting there watching. Now, I would say we have a decent chance of beating all of them if it were normal circumstances. And I know some people hate to hear me say this, but the Atlanta Hawks, we are 10 games ahead of everyone in the Eastern Conference. We have home court pretty much throughout the playoffs, except for, the finals. But that's the finals. That is like the ultimate, thing we can get to. I don't think Budenholzer is going to be stressing his players as much to get some of these wins. And I think he's going to take the opportunity to probably rest some of the players, seeing as we have, injuries from Thabo and Mike Scott. So
you think he pulls a Popovich and rests all of his players on national television against the Warriors?
Let me have a pop for that.
No way. There is no way. There is no way. If that happens, I don't know what I'll do.
Game is going to be tough, though. Oh, man. No, Thabo. There goes one of our wing defenders against, their
Klay
best.
Thompson and... Yeah. And Green pulling down 20-plus rebounds.
No Mike Scott coming off the bench to help us score, so we're going to have to rely on something to get the scoring from. I'm going to do a cop-out. I'm going to be safe and say 2-2.
Wow.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah.
It's all right. It's okay.
I did it.
I mean,
it's out there now.
Yeah, it's there now. Now it's there. Now it's real.
You heard it.
Ben, what do you think? What do you think, Ben, sitting in your car? What do you think? In your own little world there. What do you think?
I'm going to go 3-1.
Okay.
Oh, actually, am I? I don't know, because Russell Westbrook's been sweet. He's been so good. So I can't even remember. Is that game home or away, actually?
That's away. The only game that's home is the Spurs.
Oh.
But we're not adding the Spurs. We're not adding the Spurs into this. All right.
Oh, suppose, yeah, because
we're not
recorded.
Adding the Spurs because we're recording before that. So it's going to be, yeah. So who's it? Who are we going to lose to?
Oh, I might have to say that we're going to go 1-2 then, maybe.
No, because we have the Kings. No. We have the Kings.
Oh, the Kings.
It's Lakers.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
We have the Kings tomorrow night. Away.
Yes. Sorry.
So it's a four-game. It's a four-game road trip. It's Lakers, Kings, Warriors, Thunder.
Yes, I forgot about the Kings.
The Spurs are next Sunday. So, Josh, do you want to change that? Do you want to change anything, or are you still going 2-2?
Oh, we play the Kings. No, I'm going to keep it 2-2.
2-2.
I just feel that.
So we're going to lose two straight to the Warriors and the Thunder.
The Thunder especially, they're more desperate to win just because they're not in the playoffs right now. And it's just, you know, the Hawks are, they're exactly where they're at. They can afford to have injuries now because they're so far ahead of everyone. So I don't think they're stressing. They're going to be playing not to get hurt for the playoffs. So,
yeah. Fair enough. Ben, what about you now? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going 2-2.
Oh, yeah.
Two wins, then two losses.
Who are we losing to?
We're losing to OKC and we're losing to Golden State.
Oof.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I just think if I say that and then we win, that'll be like better than if I say, like, for me, I'll be more excited. Like, yeah, we won. If I say we're going to win and we lose, it'll be like, ah, damn. So I'm going to say that we're going to lose. 2-2.
All right. James, what do you think?
Surprisingly, I don't know why I'm doing this. 4-0.
Please.
I'm pulling the chips all in 4-0.
You're a betting man.
Wow. Well, any justification for that, James? Oof. Or is it just a gut feeling? Are you just going with the gut here?
I'm going with the gut.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That is bold.
This is Angels in the outfield.
Bold moves here, ladies and gentlemen. I myself am going to go the middle route. I'm going to go 3-1 this week.
Okay.
I think, but who are we going to lose to?
That's the question.
Who are we going to lose? We're going to lose to the Thunder, and the reason for that is we're going to lose to the Thunder, and it's for the reasons that Josh said, which are we're going to beat the Warriors away. I have a feeling that we're going to do it. I think that the guys are going to get up for it. It's just going to be that game. And then the Thunder, we're going to lose to them because we're going to come off of a big win and we're going to kind of have a bit of drop-off there against Russell Westbrook, who's going to come out like a mad dog. I think it could be flipped. Like, it might be we lose to the Warriors, but I don't – if we're going to win one of those two games, we're going to beat the Warriors because that's the game that matters. And in the statement games this year, we've won them. We've won the statement games that we've needed to make.
Yeah.
And the Thunder game doesn't really feel like a statement game. I don't think that Bud feels the need to take that win. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. That's what I'm doing. That's how I feel about it.
All right.
Wow. So, we're going to go for a break now, but you do not want to miss what's coming up. We have Taz from the Starters on the show. You do not want to miss it. Join us after the break.
Join us each Monday at 10 a.m. to listen to CoreCast. This is a podcast run by the fans about the Atlanta Hawks. Listen to our special guests.
Good luck with that.
Listen to our interesting topics.
That is an adorable story.
It's just 1 hour a week about the best team in the East.
Oh, it's our turn. You know, to kick some butt and take some names.
Tweet us in your questions and we'll try to get them out to our special guests as much as we can.
You know, that's a great question.
You do not want to miss out.
He got his watch. He got his wallet. He got everything.
Find us on Peachtree Hoops or on Twitter at CoreCast. You stay classy, Atlanta.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to this week's episode of CoreCast. We are very, very fortunate to have Taz from the Starters with us. How are you, Taz? We're so happy to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm doing wonderful, man. I can't stop looking at your ceiling right now.
Sorry about that.
No, I like it.
Oh, thank you. It's a nice ceiling. So it's great to have you on the show. We're going to talk about some Hawks and obviously everything else about the NBA with you. Just a question to start you off. Would you put any Hawks at the moment on your MVP ladder, on your personal MVP ladder?
Wow. No, not a chance. Not a chance. They are a wonderful team to watch. Let's throw out the positives and the love first. But no, not you can't put them in the same category with some of the other guys that are carrying their teams. Teague and Millsap and Horford, they don't have to do the same things that the other guys do. So Other guys, Hawks, in terms of the MVP race, yeah.
I mean, how can you have an MVP from the cumulative January player of the month? You know, how are you going to pick an MVP from that? It's not possible.
Yeah, it was a little unfortunate that the 6 through 9 guys didn't get on that players of the month. What, they're not part of the team?
I mean, Dennis Schroeder has been as much a part of that as anyone, right?
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
he's good. I didn't like the dunk on Archie Goodwin on Friday, and then the stare down. Like he didn't dunk.
But it's part of his swagger. It works.
Yeah, but he didn't even come close to dunking on him.
That's true. I just Taz, again, thanks so much for coming on. My first question for you, you know, I think that we can all remember the New York Times article that was written about you guys. Congratulations for that. That's obviously an honor. And obviously the NBA has seen a huge uptick in support this year, much like the Atlanta Hawks have. And you being in Atlanta, I'm sure have sort of seen that growth firsthand. What do you think it says about the NBA this year? What do you think has changed that has brought so many more people, you know, to the NBA and have been following the season this year?
I don't think much has changed, to be honest. I think more and more people know about League Pass. I think that's a big part of it. I mean, a big part of it is the MVP race, I think, that you mentioned. There's just a bunch of guys that are sort of in the race, and that really usually doesn't happen all that much. There's just a bunch of good storylines. You know, the Hawks are one. People want to hate on the Cavs, so they follow the Cavs pretty closely. The Western Conference is a good storyline. I just think in general, you know, the league's got some good things going on. It's a good time to be an NBA fan. This, you know, we're recording this mid-March, and usually this is sort of the point when the NBA takes a bit of a dive in terms of ratings because of March Madness. I don't tune out myself personally, I still think that people are still tuning in right now, right? Because it feels like there's just a ton going on and there's a ton of interesting.
It feels like these games it feels like these games are actually important.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Totally.
James, do you have a question for Taz?
Taz, it's really nice having you on the show and everything. I want to kind of steer away a little bit from the Atlanta Hawks and NBA side, and I actually want to talk about the podcast side of things. Just in your opinion, how has the podcast improved the quality in the way that we're able to communicate ideas when we talk about things like the NBA or the Atlanta Hawks?
Oh, just in general, sense?
Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible for me to go like a day without listening to a pod. It's just so easy, right? It's so comfortable, so accessible. I'm listening to basketball pods, like, you know, at least a new one every day. And anybody with, you know, like you guys with microphones are able to communicate your ideas. So it's pretty cool, you know, from when we started back in 2006, you know, there's a few voices back then. But now anybody who, you know, has a microphone and or camera can make it happen. So it's pretty great. And it's just become a lot more mainstream since then, where, like, you know, there's a billion basketball podcasts out there. So it's, you don't have to, there's no more appointment viewing really to listen to standard sort of basketball talk. Like, you don't have to tune into ESPN at 6 PM and watch SportsCenter anymore. It's just not really needed, to be honest. And it's sometimes you know, people don't have an hour to spare. So it's just so much more convenient. And, you know, maybe it's a bad thing that we're, me, myself, and a lot of other people multitask and, you know, don't really focus on one thing all the time. But, man, I'm an internet kid, and I just love being able to do that all the time while I'm shaving, while I'm, you know, brushing my teeth, while I'm doing whatever. I can be listening to guys talk about basketball, which sounds really pathetic, but I absolutely love it.
Sweet. Yeah, I love talking basketball too. Anyway, Taz, as the others have said, thank you for coming on. And
no problem.
I'm going to tell you, thank you for coming on. But I'm going to do something I know some fans don't want to hear. We're going to talk about Hawks and playoffs right now.
All right.
So let me ask you, one thing that's gone around even amongst the fan base and that we hear from the national side is, do you think the Hawks
can do it without one true superstar? Can they do it as a collective team? And also, when the playoffs do come, do you think they can, like, kick it up a gear? Like, you know how they say, like, as we saw last year in the playoffs, LeBron was able to kick it up a gear, come to finals in the Eastern Conference. And I was just wondering, do you think the Hawks can do this sort of thing?
Well, I don't think they have one guy that can or needs to kick it up a gear. Like, is there going to be another level of Jeff Teague that we haven't seen? I mean, maybe a tiny bit. But they, yeah, as you mentioned, they do it as a collective, and the you know, gear that they have to kick up is just being able to share the ball like the Spurs, right? Just being able to get back to that January, that magical month of January where things were working absolutely perfectly. And I think they can get back to that. You know, it's all about coaching and finding their groove, because yeah, they can. What the Spurs did last year, they don't have a true superstar anymore. Like, Tim Duncan doesn't carry the team anymore. He's a fantastic player. Manu Ginobili, obviously a fantastic player. But yeah, like, you know, Tony Parker does his thing, and he's extremely important, and Kawhi Leonard is extremely important. But they just have to play to their capabilities. And those guys showed. I mean, I'm sure the Hawks, you know, follow that roadmap every day in their locker room. Like, that's who they are. They need to be following the Spurs. And can they get back there? Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Mike Budenholzer is the guy that has to make that happen. Like, that's so much about rhythm and coaching, and it's not about – the reason why it doesn't work as well is because it's – or it doesn't work as often is because it doesn't rely on one guy like Bron turning it up. It's relying upon 10 guys and a coaching staff and everybody really making it happen. So it's tougher, I think, because you don't rely on one guy to take over. And there's just so many working parts. But can they? I really, really, really hope so. It'd be great, you know, to watch that happen again.
Well, it'd be wonderful for me to actually see the team even make it to the ECF, even though some may see that as a small feat. Me as a diehard.
That's an accomplishment. That would be an accomplishment, I think. Like, I think, yeah.
I was just going to say, I agree with what you were saying on the coaching. Last year in the playoffs when they versus Indiana, one of the things, you could see the chess moves between Vogel and Budenholzer. They had Scola kill us for like a game or so, and then they had David West hurting us. So it was interesting to see the chess matches being played through the coaches as the series went on. So I agree with you in saying that coaching does really matter for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, from half to half, it can change. Like, you see a distinct advantage, you know, I don't know, Mike Scott can be, you know, let's hope he gets back healthy. Like, he can, you know, like, you turned it on and hit six threes, you know, then one half or whatever. Like, from half to half, you have to be that ready to jump and change your sort of mindset. And, you know, we probably won't see Mike Scott hit six threes again, but, you know, Shelvin Knakstra comes in and just drives straight down the lane for 12 straight or whatever. Like, something has to happen where these guys are just ready for playoff basketball. And that's obviously, you know, it's a stupid cliche that people say, you know, the bright lights come on, or are these guys going to show up? Because, you know, they don't have a lot of playoff experience. They really don't. You know, a couple of the guys have reached conference finals, but as lesser parts. You know, can they be comfortable and doing that? I mean, last year was good for them, you know, to be in a good, hard-fought series. But, you know, that's round one. If they get to round two, which they better get to round two, you know, are they going to be able to do that in round two? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We better see some playoff wins. At least four.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Last week we had Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report on the show, and he was talking about how it would be crazy if Atlanta fell to the Pacers and Oklahoma beat Golden State, and both first seeds fell out. What's your views on the whole George situation? Do you think it'd be a stupid idea for him to come back this season?
No, actually, it's funny that Bucher said that. It's very similar, I think. The fact that Durant is out and Paul George, obviously Paul George, a longer injury, but the longer that those guys sit out, the closer it gets to sort of playoff time, especially Paul George. How well is he going to play in the first round, considering he hasn't played since last summer? So I think the chances for, you know, whoever they play, whether they jump up to the seventh seed or they stick in the eighth seed and face Atlanta, the chances for those teams to knock off the Pacers get better and better the more he sits out. I don't think it would be stupid. No, I don't think that at all. I think, you know, as long as he's healthy, he should come back, but he's got to come back soon. I mean, as we sit here, we record, it's 5 weeks away, playoff game number one, 12:30 Eastern, wherever the hell it's going to be. I'm pretty pumped for that. But, you know, if we get to 2 weeks, 3 weeks left without PG, I think if you're the Hawks or you're the Cavs, whoever's going to face him, you got to be pretty pumped because he's got to get some reps in big time. And Durant to a lesser degree because, you know, he's played a ton this year.
Interesting. Tony, do you have a question from the Atlanta Hawks Reddit for Tess?
I actually do. I think, one of the questions that they asked, and this is from A-Town Bomber, he gave sort of two hypothetical situations. He says the first one is, what has to happen right for the Hawks to win a title, and what has to go wrong for them to not get the title? So which one of those two scenarios do you think you could speak to more? Like, what would have to go right for the Hawks in order to reach that final and to ultimately maybe take home a title this year? As implausible as that may sound.
Yeah, it does sound implausable, but I don't know, man. You know, when you see the way they function, like against the best teams in the world, you know, see how they beat the Golden State Warriors. It doesn't seem that far fetched to me. If they just have to be, again, functioning on all their parts have to be functioning so well, and I think the main cog that has to really be going is Jeff Teague to me, because, you know, there's just not a great ball handler other than himself. You know, Schroeder is great, but you know who's going to be playing in crunch time, and Teague has to be making that team going all. They just got to get that team going all the time. So he's got to be aggressive. You know, when playoff D picks up, that's a difference. There's a big difference between playoff D and regular season D. They're going to be able to stick with the Millsaps. They'll do a better job of hanging with Korver. Teague is the guy who can get his own shot when he wants. So I think it's really on him to get going, and then, you know, spacing gets a little bit more prevalent for the big boys. And I'm worried a little bit about like a double team coming at Teague at times, just to get the ball out of his hands, because then what happens? Are they going to move the ball well enough? I think it's up to sort of Teague, who, I don't know. I imagine like the Spurs and what they did to Chris Paul in years past, like just get the ball out of his hands, and then, you know, they're kind of SOL.
Get someone else to beat you. Because there isn't really a secondary ball handler in that starting five. Kyle Korver can't really create off the dribble. That's a good point.
Yeah, I'm worried. That's the only thing. And then the size is the other issue a little bit. You know, Horford plays like a center, but he still is 6'10", and Millsap plays like a four, but he still is 6'8". It's not just height, but they're, you know, middle of the pack in defensive rebounding. And they're going to play a team like the Bulls or the Cavs, who are awesome on the offensive glass. So that's, you know, it's all about matchups in the playoffs, and it's right. All about things you do well versus things you do poorly. So that's definitely a worry. And I thought they may go out and get, you know, a big, just in case. But it's probably not going to happen now.
Yeah. I don't think Austin Day is really bringing much to the rebounding category.
No, they're buying into the 3-point shot and the 3-point shot only.
It's working for them. So why not?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it sounds implausible, but listen, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to believe, like, that a team from Atlanta could ever go to the conference. It's just we get so caught up in recency and, like, oh, these guys don't have a superstar. But, man, we watched a team in the Spurs last year that just had what the Hawks don't have, just tangent. What the Hawks don't have that the Spurs have is, like, just that sort of anchor in Tim Duncan on the defensive end, too. Like, I don't know. There are things that the Hawks don't have that the Spurs do have. And to call the Spurs, you know, like, they obviously have the championship pedigree. So they went from Tim Duncan carrying a team on his back during his prime years, and then, you know, changing and altering their sort of style and, you know, still carrying with them those championship years and all that playoff experience. That's something the Hawks don't have. But I don't know. I mean, the Cavs also don't have playoff experience outside of Braun mainly, you know, other than their role guys. So, you know, who knows? They also have a rookie coach compared to Budenholzer, who's been around a lot of championship teams in the NBA. So it's going to be awesome, man. I really, you know, the Bulls also pick it up. We all love the Western Conference sort of playoff picture, but here's hoping that the Eastern Conference kind of picks it up
this year. Yeah.
So I want to talk about another team that's in the Atlanta area, the Georgia State Panthers. Today we saw them beat Georgia Southern 38-36 in the Sun Belt Championship game. They named Kevin Ware the Sun Belt Player of the Year for the tourney MVP.
But, GSU.
I was kind of curious. In the past, we've been seeing R.J. Hunter, like, in the fringe of a first-round pick in the NBA draft. Do you see someone like R.J. Hunter or even someone like Kevin Ware being picked up by the Atlanta Hawks in the upcoming draft?
I don't know any of the names that you just mentioned, so I probably won't comment on anything that you just said.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm with Tass on this one. Call me crazy. I don't watch any college basketball.
Georgia State. Yeah.
Maybe it's because my college, University of Chicago, their basketball team doesn't even exist. So, I mean, it's there, but we don't really – this is why I love the NBA.
Gosh, I remember when the University of Chicago was in the Big Ten way back.
That was a long, long time ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah. Tess, I actually have – this is maybe even – some would call it a puff question, but you know what? I don't care. March 30th, the Bucks are coming to town to Atlanta. And they're having Greek night in Phillips Arena. I'm actually going to be there for it. Will you be there to support your Greek brethren in Phillips Arena that night? Watch Giannis Antetokounmpo do his thing.
Well, that is a note I have to take. I was unaware of that happening. Thank you for the information. What do you think Greek Night's going to be all about? What's going to happen? Are they going to...
God, I wish I knew. I don't know. Maybe they'll have Euros for sale, in the concourse there. Maybe they'll have a traditional folk dance at halftime. I've been known to dance a couple Greek folk dances. I can bust out a Kalamatia no when I have to.
I'd love to join the halftime dance. That would be fantastic. Giannis would be really good at that as well, I'm sure. Like,
we should ask him to try and get out there and do some dancing a little, you know.
If he does, you know, the standard sort of shoulder dance, he can carry four guys.
He just like carries them all, just like small Greek men hanging off of his shoulders. that's a good image, I think.
That's thanks, Tony, for that. It could happen. I may be down there March 30th.
Hey, you know, I'm sure we'd be happy to have you. You know, I don't really – I say we. The Greek community in Atlanta is very small. It's very tight-knit. That would be great. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. And you know, hey, Phillips Arena has been doing a lot of fun stuff like that. They had Tinder, the swipe night, right? Swipe right night. You know, they do some pretty fun stuff over there.
They do.
Do you manage to get out to a lot of games?
I don't – I mean, like, you know, standard 3-4 a year. For me, I just watch so much on television, and like part of our job is to, you know, watch as much ball as possible. So if you go down and by the time you get home, it's a bit of a struggle to DVR a few games, but, I've managed to you know, I've been to a couple where I saw the sort of the evolution of the Hawks season where it was quiet at the beginning of the year, in there is standard sort of Hawks crowd where it's like, all right, I'm at a basketball game, but it kind of doesn't feel like a basketball game. Maybe it feels like a Georgia State Panthers game. I don't know. But then it starts to, you know, it started to pick up. I got to be at the Golden State game, which was ridiculous.
Wow.
And since then it's been great. Yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, guys. Well, unfortunately that is the end of our show there. We just want to thank Taz again for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you on. We'd love to have you on again soon.
Anytime, guys. Keep up the hard work and the fun work.
Thank you. So join us next week, guys. Next week we have Lang Whitaker on from NBA.com. Please join us next Monday.